Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome into the Finnish Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, joined as always by Mike Tagliere. You can follow us on Twitter, at Bobby Fantasy Pro and at Mike Tagliere NFL. Tags, what's going on, buddy?
Just another day, ready to talk some football. Got one of my favorite guests on the show today, so I'm looking forward to it, man.
It's Andy Behrens of Yahoo Sports. If you haven't already, sign up for your fantasy football league at Yahoo. They do a great job over there. Andy's on Twitter at his name. I'm sure you already follow him at his name, Andy Behrens. Andy, thanks for coming to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm in the best shape of my life. I don't know what to say. A lot of people calling me a regression candidate, but I'm here to prove the haters wrong.
I love it. Here's what we're going to be talking about, guys. It's going to be a fun show. We've got 20 high upside running backs and wide receivers. It's going to be all Tags and Andy sharing their favorite upside players. It's going to be fun. I love this topic.
Yeah, no, it's a different topic, trying to find guys. Like, we have some guidelines that we're going to follow as we go throughout the show. And it's just, you know, we obviously don't want to talk about the same players over and over as the offseason goes on. But this show is going to be a little bit different, just the way it's structured. And I'm sure Bobby is going to help guide you guys through that.
I'll just say I may have blown off the structure a little bit.
That's perfectly fine. I mean, you're the guest. You can do whatever you want. All right, Tags, we'll get to the guidelines here in just a second. But first, I wanted to tell you guys about our cheat sheet creator. It is just so dang easy to use. You can find it, by the way, at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. Just super convenient being able to import your own rankings from anywhere on the web, even a spreadsheet. And what you can do is you can combine the most accurate experts, your favorite experts, into one consensus cheat sheet. You can even import all of this into our draft simulator and draft assistant tools. It is a breeze to figure out to use, super user-friendly, and it's really going to help you out in your drafts. You can check out the cheat sheet creator at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. And by the way, we're on Instagram as well at Fantasy Pros. Tags is on Instagram at your name, Mike Tagliere.
It's just Mike Tagliere. I took off the NFL, and it's stupid. I'm thinking about going back to it.
I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro, and Kyle is at Kyle Y NFL. So give us all a follow. Again, at Fantasy Pros, at Mike Tagliere, at Bobby Fantasy Pro, and at Kyle Y NFL. Lots of people are moving on over to Instagram. We're giving a lot of fantasy football. And I'm doing fantasy baseball advice over there as well. So, guys, let's dive into the show, okay? We've got the high upside running backs first in Tags. What are the guidelines here?
All right, the guidelines that we were supposed to follow, but Andy has already told you that he's not going to follow them. We have two running backs outside the top 10 who are going to definitely have top 5 potential, two running backs outside the top 25 who can finish top 15, and then one deep sleeper who can essentially be a lottery ticket in your fantasy leagues. And since I'm so kind, I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Andy to be the first one to talk about a player, because I've put down a few names just in case he stole one of mine.
You know, I may have accidentally followed the rules here, as you say them again. So that might not be a concern. I didn't take anybody inside the top like 15 or maybe even 20 in terms of ADP. I did go a little bit deeper than that. I'm going to start with DeAndre Swift. I don't get the gap between his ADP, just looking at Yahoo Leagues and NFC, I don't get the gap at all between his ADP and Edwards-Helaire and Jonathan Taylor.
Interesting.
DeAndre Swift is a great player. Detroit had a desperate, glaring need at running back, in my opinion. We have Kerryon coming off not only a relatively poor season, inefficient season, but his second year in a row in which he suffered a significant knee injury. That's a concern. DeAndre Swift was just, obviously, it goes without saying, great college player, arguably the most interesting player in his draft class at his position. I think he's going like 16 picks later than Taylor, which I just think is nuts. I think he has a clear role waiting for him. Not to say that it's going to be 80% of the backfield touches in Detroit. I don't think that's going to be the case at all. But can it be 60? Can it be 65 with him just locking down the primary receiving role out of that backfield? Yeah, I think that's totally in play. He's a wonderful receiver at Georgia. He actually had of all the rookies in this last draft class. I was just saying the other day on the Yahoo podcast that DeAndre Swift's game against Alabama a couple of years ago in the SEC title game was just one of my favorites to watch. Like just prepping like film on the entire draft class. There wasn't a game that I enjoyed any more than him just absolutely clowning Alabama a couple years ago. So I think the world of him. I can't believe he's going outside the top like 20-21 running backs.
Tags, he was my favorite draft prospect. But the thing is, all these rookie running backs, I mean, Dobbins ended up in Baltimore. Clyde Edwards-Helaire ended up in Kansas City. And obviously, Jonathan Taylor ended up in Indianapolis. Those are some of the best offensive lines in football and some of the best offenses in football. But Swift is going to start right away. We know that for sure. I don't know if we can say the same thing about Jonathan Taylor. And I don't even know if we can say the same thing about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now, obviously, they have a lot more upside. But what do you think about this? Would you draft DeAndre Swift where he's going right now?
I can't say that Swift has a job for sure either. I mean, Kerryon Johnson, when he's been on the field, he's been pretty good. And I think the reason that the Lions felt the need to draft Swift is because Kerryon Johnson hasn't been able to stay healthy, and it could just work out better as a timeshare situation. And that's my issue with Swift right now, is that him and Kerryon Johnson are very similar running backs to me. And I say that in not exact same, but I'm saying that they're both three down running backs that I don't want to say that either of them excel at anything, but they're really good at kind of everything. So I'm really curious to see how this works out. DeAndre Swift had an interview the other day. He said that he doesn't know what his role is yet with the team, and that he's going to be battling Kerryon Johnson for the snaps in the backfield, and that he's preparing for a battle, which should be expected. I do expect Swift to win that because they obviously just spent a high second round pick on him. He is a true three down back, but you have to wonder about the touches he gets compared to someone like Jonathan Taylor, who is clearly more talented than Marlon Mack. And then you get to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. There is absolutely nothing that Damian Williams does better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Nothing at all. But I am with Andy in the fact that I think DeAndre Swift is going too late. I would take him over someone like Devin Singletary, who's going much earlier than him. Because Singletary, that's a guy who's in a timeshare. And Zach Moss, as far as I'm concerned, might be better than Devin Singletary. I don't think it's going to start that way, but he's going to get the more valuable touches. Whereas Swift, I'm anticipating him to be maybe on the better side of a 60-40 split, which is fine. And again, that's going to have like a low-end RB2 type appeal. And if he, for whatever reason, does pull away from Kerryon Johnson, or Kerryon Johnson misses more time, yes, DeAndre Swift has a chance to finish as a top 12 running back.
Interesting. Top 12 in that offense. Okay. He's being drafted right around guys like Cam Akers, Darius Geis, Keyshawn Vaughn.
Darius Geis. That blows my mind.
I'm taking Swift over all them and not even close.
He should go a mile ahead of those guys. Like I get the optimism for Cam Akers, and Cam Akers would be a fine candidate for this segment. But I think there's a much clearer role for DeAndre Swift.
Agreed.
All right, Tags, it's your turn, and I am 1,000% certain you're going with Kenyon Drake here.
Well, yeah, I mean, Kenyon Drake is, no, he's not outside the top 10. He was actually,
I think, right, okay, so you got Miles Sanderson.
Well, it kind of varies depending on what scoring format, so I didn't put Drake there, otherwise Drake would definitely be there. But I'm going to go with Miles Sanders, somebody that I've talked about that is moving up my draft board as we get further and further throughout the offseason, because, again, the Eagles have not signed a draft pick. Andy, we've talked about Miles Sanders on this show before, so I want to get your opinion on him in this Eagles backfield, because Doug Peterson, he really hasn't, like, stuck with one running back, but knowing the roster as it sits right now, we're not going to pretend that Boston Scott is going to start stealing goal line work from someone like Miles Sanders. Sanders is obviously used in the passing game. How do you feel about Miles Sanders heading into 2020?
I think he's a pretty clear top 10 running back, probably, like, you know, like if somebody wants to take him at the back end of the first round, I totally get it. He dodged the Carlos Hyde bullet. He dodged the Devontae Freeman bullet to this point. Not that that's a particularly potent bullet anyway.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But those were the worries, right? That they would add some veteran back that could just muck it up. And I don't think Boston Scott is much more than an understudy, maybe a slight rotational role, but I don't think he's somebody who's going to play any kind of Jordan Howard role, right? Like this is all Sanders, and he's a super talented player, a versatile player. And you're right that they haven't rolled with like one just sort of foundational back, but there's no one to compete right now. I think Miles Sanders and Josh Jacobs for me is a real debate. I love Jacobs. He would have been a candidate for this segment as well. But I think he's pretty clearly at this point a top 10 back for me.
So I've really come around on my opinion on Miles Sanders, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but the guy who changed my mind is, you guys know Drake Jordan, right? Three times high stake champion. He's a parody account about fantasy football. And he was making fun of the people who don't believe in Miles Sanders because of Doug Peterson using backfield splits. And he was basically saying, well, yeah, what did you expect when he had these three turds at running back? And all of a sudden he's got Miles Sanders and he's going to use Miles Sanders. He already showed us last year in the last couple weeks. So
hold on a second. I'm gonna stop there. Hold on. So there is some shade in why Miles Sanders is not going as like a top six running back, because if he did have that, so one, people say, oh, Doug Peterson's never had a running back like Miles Sanders. That's a bunch of crap. He did actually last year, and he gave Jordan Howard carries in front of
him. Well, to start the season, but rookies, that happens every single year with rookies.
No, it was the beginning of the season. The only reason that Miles Sanders started getting those carries is because Jordan Howard was dead. He was not active. So if he's not playing, he can't give him carries. Darren Sproles got hurt that year, last year. So it was like there were no receivers on the team. So that's where you saw Miles Sanders get a lot of his work in the passing game, because there were no receivers in the team. They were throwing to Greg Ward, who was off the street. I take offense to this because Ryan Matthews was a damn good football player.
He was, but he wasn't Miles Sanders, man.
I think he was just as good as Miles Sanders.
Athletically, he was more athletic than Sanders, but not the same football player.
I like them both. Ryan Matthews had trouble staying healthy.
And fumble problems.
So that was a problem. But what I'm saying is that Doug Peterson did have Miles Sanders already.
But he also had Darren Sproles. Like, if you have Darren Sproles, you're going to use Darren Sproles on third downs.
But again, the reason I brought up Miles Sanders, don't forget that I'm the one who brought him up in this segment.
Sure.
I brought him up. What I'm saying, the reason I like him now is because there is nobody else in the roster that could potentially steal those carries. Because if they did sign Carlos Hyde, I wouldn't be drafting Miles Sanders as a top 15 running back. I really wouldn't. Even if it is Carlos Hyde, he's better than Hyde. But that, man, it's just, but I'm saying, if they don't sign anybody else right now, I will draft Miles Sanders as a top 10 running back.
I think it's baked into the cost with the Doug Peterson effect, right? Otherwise, if we had this quality of a running back in this quality of an offense behind maybe the best offensive line in football, we'd be drafting him in the top five. We'd draft him ahead of Derrick Henry, no doubt. But right now, his ADP is number 12. Would you draft him tags ahead of Nick Chubb, Kenyon Drake, Josh Jacobs, Aaron Jones?
Josh Jacobs, 100%. Josh Jacobs, bad offense, not using the passing game. I don't think any of that changes. I would not draft him ahead of Drake. I'm getting to the point where I might take him over Aaron Jones.
It's so close.
Maybe Nick Chubb, just depending on what I want out of my player. Nick Chubb's probably a safer bet for low-end RB1 production, but he lacks the upside because of Kareem Hunt there. But yeah, Miles Sanders, to me, again, if they don't sign anybody, I have zero issue with someone taking Miles Sanders at the top of the second round.
In that third tier of running backs, I think I would go Drake and then Sanders and then Chubb. Andy, which order do you have these guys in?
I think Jacobs is great. Like, I get the concern about the offense being pretty boring. They added a bunch of pieces, none of them particularly spicy, in my opinion. I think Jacobs is still the foundation of the offense. He doesn't need to gain that many targets, right? Like, if Josh Jacobs, as good as he was last year, can just stay healthy, because it was that shoulder toward the end of the year that really compromised him. if he just stays healthy, I mean, anybody who's looked at the, he's one of those guys where like the eye test and the advanced analytics agree. He was pretty great. Really, really good player. If he can just get to like, I don't know, give me 45 receptions, give me 40, 45 receptions. So I no longer have to worry about you and have PPR formats. That's all it takes. So for me, he's still a little bit ahead of Sanders and that like, but you know, in my view, it's like Jacob, Sanders and Drake in a line. Like Chubb to me is a different sort of discussion, and he's almost format dependent because I entirely buy the fact that, you know, Kareem Hunt is there. And as long as Kareem Hunt is healthy, we probably don't see Nick Chubb get to 40 or 45 receptions either. But he's just a marvelously efficient back. And he's a clear candidate to lead the NFL in rushing in any given season that he's healthy. So like you like him in standard, you like him in half PPR, you start to dislike him a little bit more in PPR.
All right, Andy, well, it's back to you for your second high upside running back, and then we'll flip back to tags. Who do you have for us, Andy?
Yeah, I'm going to go Raheem Mostert, who is actually drawn.
Yeah, baby.
drawn a little bit of criticism from some quarters of the fantasy Twitter universe, I think. And like, I just feel like if there's a moment here where people are doubting him because of the trade demand, like I don't even think they're very far apart on salary. Like, I think the Niners could actually make this work.
He just wants like $3 million. That's not that big of a deal.
Right. I feel like they could, you know, teams can generally find a way through extra guarantees or incentives to toss him a bone and make him feel a little bit better. The upside for Mostert is that he gets like 65 or 70% of the backfield touches in a Shanahan offense. Like it does, like this explains itself. If that's there for him, he could plausibly finish as a top 10, top 12 fantasy back for sure. He was ridiculously efficient last season, 5.5 yards per carry, almost 13 yards per reception. All he needs are the touches, and they are there for him because he just profoundly outproduced Tevin Coleman last year. It wasn't even close, particularly in the biggest moments when he was near legendary. So I think the upside for Mostert is pretty clearly top 12.
So, Tags, this is really interesting with me for Mostert because I'm looking at the expert rankings right now, and the highest guys on Mostert, Dalton Del Don, Yahoo Sports, RB15. We've got Matt Harmon, Yahoo Sports, RB19.
Dalton is a total Niners fan, apologist, zealot.
Okay. Well, regardless, I'm reading off all these Yahoo guys and former Yahoo guys as well. We've got Andy Behrens, RB20. Brandon Funston, formerly with Yahoo, RB14. Brad Evans, formerly with Yahoo, RB19. Me and Dan Harris are up there as well. But this is what really scares me, Tags, okay? Pat Fitzmaurice, always in the top 10 in fantasy accuracy, right? RB36, he's the lowest guy on Raheem Mostert. Where do you stand, man?
Wow, I'm kind of in between all you guys because I understand the upside, and I do agree that he is a guy that can finish top 12 at his position, 100%. That's there. Tevin Coleman, he's a timeshare guy, and anytime that any team, including the Falcons and then the 49ers, when they've gone to him in like a workhorse role, he's kind of faltered. The question is, how big of a role does Jerick McKinnon have? They've kept him on the roster for multiple years now when they probably should have cut him. They never should have signed him in that deal to begin with, but I don't trust Kyle Shanahan very much. So when you get outside the top 24, running backs, that's when I'm okay taking him, because you're not taking him with a top four, top five pick. If you can get him in like the sixth round, I'm okay with taking someone like Mostert because, again, the upside is there. But I don't know if you ever feel confident every single week putting him in your lineup. So, yes, the upside's there, but at the same time, his cost is it's about right for me.
Sure. Yeah. Everyone knows I love Raheem Mostert. I'm not going to talk about it anymore.
I had Mostert on my list, though, of a guy outside the top 25 who can finish top 15. But I'm going to go back to running back being drafted outside the top 10 with top five upside. That's Todd Gurley.
You're right.
Guys, I did a study. It went up on the site last week. It is what does team scoring mean to fantasy football? And it seems like a very elementary type. Like the guy, your running back needs to be on a team that scores fantasy points. That sounds pretty simple, right? But a lot of people overlook it. And I know that because they were drafting guys like Le'Veon Bell in the first round last year when he's playing for Adam Gase. We have Todd Gurley. It's a fact that over the last 7 years, if you play on a top 12 scoring offense, you have double the chance of finishing as a top six running back. Todd Gurley is playing for the Atlanta Falcons with Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Hayden Hurst. This offensive line is going to play better in 2020.
Not a good defense either.
Yeah, their defense is kind of going through a rebuild on the back end with the cornerback unit. But either way, this Falcons team under Dirk Koetter is going to throw the football. That's going to happen, and that's where a lot of fantasy points come from. We had Devonta Freeman last year finish as a top 20 running back, even though he missed some time, wasn't very efficient with his touches. This is Todd Gurley, the guy that we were taking as the number one pick in drafts just 2 years ago. I don't want to forget about him. I understand that there are some concerns about his knee, but falling all the way to RB18 in drafts now, behind guys like Chris Carson, Melvin Gordon, I don't see it. I mean, sure, Carson's upside is there, but he's battling for touches. They're signing running backs. Todd Gurley is the only guy on that roster. Brian Hill's not taking his job.
And he's on a one-year deal as well.
Ito Smith was about to get benched before he got hurt last year. So Todd Gurley, a workhorse running back playing in a top six offense and a guy that has shown like record-setting potential at running back, Todd Gurley, yeah.
Yeah, he's only missed four games in the last 4 years as well. Their offensive line was a train wreck last year. Oh, Andy, what do you think about this call?
Yeah, I think this is I don't want to like Todd Gurley, but there's no one behind him, right? Yeah, I mean, you said it. It's Ito Smith, Brian Hill. Like, there's nobody threatening him. There's nobody who should challenge his touches. We know he's a capable receiver. He wasn't necessarily used in that role last season. I mean, there's a clear path here. The worry, obviously, is the knees and potentially a chronic condition in his knees. But he gutted it out last year, played more games than I would have imagined he'd play. Not particularly efficient, but again, there's a path to like 350 touches if he can keep himself on the field. And as you say, there's almost no way that Atlanta isn't going to have a top five, top seven offense. And he's just going to stumble into the end zone 10 times as long as he stays healthy.
I've got him RB13 right behind, right ahead of Austin Eckler and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who are going way ahead of him in drafts, as are Chris Carson, Leonard Fournette, Melvin Gordon. He's coming at a great discount. All right, guys, before we get to Andy's third running back, I want to tell you about Pristine Auction. You guys are going to love this site. If you've got a cave and you want to fill it with sports memorabilia, first of all, everything's guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. And second of all, you've got so many options and there are great values to be found out there. They auction off hundreds, sometimes even thousands of items in a given day, and you're guaranteed to find something that you love for your cave. So go to Pristine Auction, sign up. It's free to sign up. And enter the registration code FANTASYPROS, all one word. That's going to get you $5 off. Again, that's pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. All right, Andy, we're moving back to you for your number three here. Who do you have?
I'm going to do this just to, he wasn't even on my list, but I think I'm just going to pick a fight with Tags a little bit on this one. I think there's a pretty clear path for Damian Williams to be a huge fantasy factor this year.
Totally agree. Yes.
He's already been a league winner. He's literally been a league winner. Two years ago, the guy wouldn't stop scoring in December, right? Like, I won multiple titles with him. It was cheat code stuff. Do I think Edwards-Helaire is better? Absolutely. I think Edwards-Helaire is going to be a wonderful player in that offense. I think they're not done with Damian Williams. I think he's got at least another year there as not a high volume player. He's never been a high volume player, but certainly someone who, especially in a year like this, a year where continuity, it just means everything, right? Year to year continuity. There's been no normal offseason. It's going to be difficult for Edwards-Helaire to get integrated into the offense. I think Williams is going to be an essential player for them. And it's an offense where we don't need a guy to get, like, I don't even have to talk about his snaps. I don't have to talk about what his workload is going to be. Because when he was literally carrying fantasy owners to titles 2 years ago, he was averaging 15 touches a game. If he just gets 13, 14, 15 touches, which I think is totally in play in like a 50-50 split with Edwards-Helaire for a while, that guy's going to be a monster again. And he goes rounds after Edwards-Helaire.
Right. And he's the best backup running back, if he is the backup running back. Now, I think he's probably going to start for the first 3 to 5 weeks. That's typically what we see with running backs drafted in the late first round, is the starter hangs on to the job for a couple weeks until they learn the playbook. And now we've got COVID going on, right? And so they haven't been able to work with their teams quite as much. I think Williams starts the season getting those 12 to 15 touches per game. And then from there, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire gets hurt, Tags, just how high would you rank Damian Williams rest of the season?
Hold on a second. I'm gonna push it back here. Okay. So going back to 2013, there have been 9 running backs drafted in the first round. Those 9 running backs have averaged 250 touches.
Yeah, but average. I mean, we're talking about guys like Ezekiel Elliott and Leonard Fournette, who was drafted in the top 5.
Well, hold on. The only rookie of all of them, who didn't touch at least the ball at least 197 times was Rashad Penny, which, well,
he had a broken hand too. Yeah.
Yeah. If there was something that Damian Williams did better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I'd say, yeah, I'm going to concede this one, fellas, but there's not. There's really not. Like, you could say that Damian Williams has been a good pass catcher throughout his career. He has. But you watch Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's a little Ray Rice. Like, he's Ray Rice on the field. He has a low center of gravity. He doesn't go down on the first hit most of the time. He doesn't run out of bounds. We can't forget Damian Williams. Andy Reid was giving LeSean McCoy, 31-year-old LeSean McCoy, about like 12 touches per game with Damian Williams. So it's like, if he didn't trust him then, what makes us think he's going to trust him when they drafted a guy in the first round?
Maybe the fact that he almost won the Super Bowl MVP tags.
Well, but then again, why do you draft him? Why draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire? You have a lot of holes in that secondary. Like, that cornerback unit in Kansas City is not very good. And there were some good cornerbacks on the board when they picked him there, but they asked Patrick Mahomes. And if Patrick Mahomes wants him on the field, he's going to be on the field. I mean, Damian Williams is probably one of the best handcuffs in football for sure. And you might get some production out of him to begin the year because they might start it out as some sort of timeshare. Because if there's not a preseason, there's not a chance for Clyde Edwards-Helaire to shine against pros the way that I think he will. So I could see that. But I would make the same argument for someone like Duke Johnson, though. And that's the next guy on my list. As a deep sleeper, that could be a lottery ticket. Duke Johnson.
Do you really think Bill O'Brien would use him the way that we all know he should be used?
Well, that's the thing.
I don't think so.
If David Johnson is really dead like he was at the end of the last year, then it's very possible that he has to. And like, there's a lot of targets to go around in this offense. Duke Johnson has been extremely efficient. Like, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, there's obviously something there where coaches just don't like Duke Johnson. They don't want to give him more touches, but he's been extremely efficient with the touches he does get.
And not just passing either. I mean, he runs between the tackles quite well.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't understand why Duke Johnson doesn't get more touches. They traded it. What was it? A third round pick for him, I think. So yeah. They clearly valued him. And then he got like 60 some targets last year.
I mean, but they clearly don't value picks, right?
Like, yeah. Well, Bill O'Brien, he doesn't value his team in the future either.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think Duke Johnson could be in the same conversation as someone like Damian Williams.
Oh man, that's crazy.
I think
to
the
me.
Kansas City offense could average 35 points per game, and I don't think Houston is headed
that's
that direction.
That's a good point.
Almost everything is new in Houston, and this is really the wrong offseason to do a thing like that, right? Like,
yeah, sure.
I don't know. I don't see these as particular. Like, I love Deshaun Watson. I love a lot of elements of that offense, but they are at very different places in the sort of development arc of those offenses. Like, the, you know, Kansas City is just a Death Star, and it doesn't take much more than 12, 13 touches, which I think Williams can still get for him to be a huge factor.
And plus, let's say that David Johnson does get hurt again. Who's to say that Duke Johnson's actually going to be the starter and they don't bring in, you know, Devonta Freeman or something?
They
like
are
that.
So bringing in Devonta
right,
Freeman.
Right.
That would happen 100%. Maybe Lamar Miller makes a comeback.
Perhaps, yeah. I don't know, Tags. I don't see this one as really a high upside. I think he's going to, you know, perform above his ADP value. But do you think Duke Johnson could be an RB2 in this offense?
Oh, he could. If he gets the touches.
I guess. Trey Cohen was an RB1 in Chicago's offense, PPR at least, a couple of years ago because he catches the ball.
Carlos Hyde was great last year in that offense, and I would have left him for dead. I thought he was cooked.
Sure, okay.
Couldn't make the Chiefs.
Yeah, that's a good point. We got two more running backs for each of you, and then we're going to flip on over to wide receivers. Andy, why don't you throw both of your running backs, your final running backs, together here? These are probably a little bit deeper.
They're not quite as deep as Damian Williams. That was just an audible I called to try to get under Tag's skin a little bit. I'm going to toss Matt Breida out there. Not that it's a good offense, certainly, and he's in a very different situation than he would have been in San Francisco, but just a fantastically efficient player with the Niners, a 5 yard per carry guy, 8.5 per reception. He's caught over 85% of his targets in the last two seasons, so he definitely has receiving skills. Going to a transitional offense, right, running behind a lesser O-line, I get it all, and there's a good possibility that they use Jordan Howard almost exclusively at the goal line. Like, those are a bunch of worries, but I feel like Breida's in a position where he's not going to crack the top 10 at running back or anything like that, but can he get to 1,100, 1,200 scrimmage yards in a healthy season? I think he can. And then my other guy, and this is almost cheating because I'm kind of going for understudy running backs here, but I'm going to go with Alexander Mattison, who sure looks like he could deliver 90 to 95% of Dalvin Cook's production if he falls into that role. Obviously, hugely efficient as a rookie, 4.6 yards per carry, caught almost all of his targets. Guy was great in college, back-to-back 1,000-yard rushing seasons, but caught 60 passes, I believe, as a collegiate player. So kind of a do-it-all back who, again, can deliver, I don't know, 95 cents on the dollar compared to Dalvin Cook.
I think that's a good way to put it. And look, I'm a Mike Boone truther, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't love Alexander Mattison, because he's the guy who would get all the touches if Dalvin Cook went down. We've seen that he can handle them. He's a very good football player. I love this call. He's one of my favorites. And I want to mention with Matt Breida, let's not forget, he's the fastest running back in the entire NFL right now.
That's good. That's a good trait.
It's a good trait. All right, Tess, what do you think about Matt Breida and Alexander Mattison?
I mean, Mattison, I think we all know the case there. We could say the same for someone like Tony Pollard. I like the Matt Breida call, because if you're looking for a potential breakout running back, you need that guy to be able to catch passes out of the backfield. And clearly, Jordan Howard isn't that guy in that offense. And if they don't take a step forward as an organization, which they probably should, the Dolphins, that division is pretty weak and they have a lot of turnaround. That's the question mark, right, with this offseason, is that there's so many moving parts in that defense and offense, for that matter, the offensive line, which really could hamper someone like Jordan Howard, who had his most successful seasons behind the Bears when they had a good offensive line. Then he went to the Eagles, again, another top six offensive line, and now he's going to the Dolphins, a team that I know they added a lot of pieces, but I can't say that there's one player on that offensive line that is for sure an above average talent. So I'm going to say that Matt Breida is a solid lottery ticket if you want to take a shot on him, because he can catch passes out of the backfield. My two running backs I want to mention last, anybody want to fight me on Ronald Jones? I mean, he's a guy that could finish as a top 12 running back 100%. I think people forget that, you know, Bruce Arians, and I've said it on this podcast before, but I know that some people are just now tuning back in to the podcast after taking maybe the summer off. But Bruce Arians, back when David Johnson was a rookie, he was one of the most efficient running backs in all of football. But still, David Johnson, I think, ended up with 160, 170 touches that year, playing behind someone like Andre Ellington. So it's clear that Bruce Arians doesn't like young running backs. And Ronald Jones was still young last year. He didn't have much experience under his belt. And as the year went on, we saw over the last couple weeks, Ronald Jones kind of exploded. Going with Tom Brady under center, having Rob Gronkowski out there as a blocker, that's one of the underrated aspects of Rob Gronkowski's game. Yes, he's a fantasy superstar. He was, but he's one of the best blocking tight ends out there. And then you have the receivers they do. Ronald Jones is going to see a lot of seven-man fronts. It should be a good time for Ronald Jones, and that offense definitely has top 12 upside. And then lastly, I want to mention a starting running back who is going undrafted, which is impossible to find, right? I think Damian Harris starts out the year as the starter for the New England Patriots. I don't think so.
ADP 75 for running backs tags.
Yeah, he's undrafted, man. I mean, to get a starting running back in that offense with Cam Newton there, he's not going to rush the ball as much as he used to. He's 31 years old now. But Damian Harris, you know, with Sony Michel coming off of another surgery, this time foot surgery for a running back, the guy's been inefficient as is. I don't know why people keep drafting Sony Michel where they do. I understand.
Well, and not just a foot surgery. Like, he got a foot surgery this spring. It wasn't right after the football season.
Yeah.
Yep. It's all bad with Sony Michel. I'll be the first to say, I liked Sony Michel a lot coming out of college. In the pros, he's looked like a completely different running back. These surgeries have added up, and a foot surgery is certainly not going to help. So I'm going to say that Damian Harris, their third round pick from 2019, is going to be the starter.
Oh, man, this is such a good call. I want Damian Harris I love everywhere. Yeah. You like it too, Andy?
I feel ashamed.
Because you don't have nothing to throw deep. Back.
That's a great call. That's an absolute
okay, so
call.
What do you think about Ronald Jones? Are you a Keyshawn Vaughn kind of guy, or are you a Ronald Jones guy? Because one of these guys is probably going to break out in this offense.
Yeah, I think Tags made the right call here. I think Ronald Jones is a guy that, you know, he's one of those players that burned people so badly a couple years ago that I feel like a significant percentage of the fantasy audience is just entirely out on him, even though he was perfectly fine last year, right? Like, we got it. Like, okay, it was a tragically bad rookie season. It was a horrifically bad rookie season. We don't see a lot of people bounce back from being necessarily that bad, but we gotta give rookies a mulligan sometimes at the running back position. Not always, but Ronald Jones showed a lot of growth last year. He was entirely competent last season. And I think there's probably more growth there, and it's going to be a wonderful offense. It was a really good point about Gronk, too. Like, the blocking for him is going to be a whole lot better, and I think he is the guy to own. I feel like a lot of the push for Vaughn was really just people raging against Ronald Jones, but I think he was fine last year.
I just want to remind people that Melvin Gordon was a top 8 fantasy football running back 3 consecutive years after his rookie season, when he went for 0 touchdowns, 3.5 yards per carry, 5.2 yards per target, and everyone wrote him off and just thought he was trash. He ended up doing great. So this kind of stuff can happen. It's a lot more dependent on the scheme, on the offensive line. And Ronald Jones now has a big upgrade at quarterback, incredible wide receivers. He could get double-digit touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, let's go wide receiver. And Andy, you're first again. Do you happen to know who this year's Chris Godwin is?
I don't know if he's this year's Chris Godwin, but I am a huge fan of DJ Chark. And I cool. seem to have him well ahead of ADP, or at least I land him in many drafts. We got to remember, like, what an absolute star he looked like for not just the first half last season, but really about 12, 13 games. He hit that ankle injury late in the season, exactly. in December. And obviously when he was playing hobbled, he still gutted it out, which was perhaps unnecessary, and had a couple of, you know, had a couple of bad weeks at the end of the season. But he was on pace before he was injured for like an 80 catch, 1200 yard, 10 touchdown season, which is a wide receiver one in any year. He has some utterly uncoachable physical traits, right? He came in with 4.3 speed. He's 6 foot four. Like 4.3 speed at 6 foot four is nuts.
Great hands too. He's phenomenal.
Yeah, much better than advertised, right? Like we just thought he was going to be a raw prospect who all of a sudden became a star like in year two. So the timeline we've had to adjust, he's the unrivaled number one receiver on his team. I don't think that, you know, the offensive coordinator change is going to be bad for business for Chark. So I like him as a guy who should see, I don't know, 145, 150 targets, like, and on that sort of target load. I just think he's going to be sensational.
So I'm looking at the rankings right now, and Andy, you've got DJ Chark higher than anybody else in the industry, wide receiver 14. And guys, keep in mind, just because this is a bold take does not mean that Andy is necessarily wrong. He was number 11 out of over 160 analysts last year in accuracy. So congratulations on that, Andy. And Tags, do you think he's wrong?
I like DJ Chark a lot. It's just difficult for me to buy into this because I think we can we all agree that the Jags are going to be a bottom 10 scoring offense? Is that fair?
I'm a Jags fan and I agree.
Yeah.
All right. So fair. The reason I'm asking the question is because I did that study on team scoring and what it means even to wide receivers. And so wide receivers, 96 wide receivers have finished top 12 over the last 7 years, 96 of them, only 10% come from bottom 10 scoring offenses. So basically you might find one a season that comes from there. And so DJ Chark, the odds are kind of stacked against him in that fact. I mean, we could talk about, there's a few players that would probably fit in that description, but I do like DJ Chark, the talent. He was a guy that last year when he came on, I don't know if anybody expected it. And maybe that's part of the reason that he was able to maybe get some man-on-man coverage and overtake some bad cornerbacks. But then as he started to get more and more notoriety, he matched up with guys like Chris Harris Jr. and scored a touchdown that didn't count in that game, but it was a touchdown over Chris Harris Jr. That was just a phenomenal grab. And it was just like, from then on, I'm like, get the ball to DJ Chark. And Gardner Minshew seemed to be a guy that understood to do that. So I do like DJ Chark. I just worry about the offense overall. So it could be one of those years where he gets 1,100 yards but scores 5 touchdowns and like limits his overall upside.
A classic Dwayne Bowe season, right?
No, Dwayne Bowe is like 700 yards and 20 touchdowns.
Put the paint of Dwayne Bowe on him. Oh, my gosh.
So bad.
All right, Tags, I assume you're picking Calvin Ridley since he's always our pick with you, Yates, or myself when we're talking breakout wide receivers.
I mean, it has to be, right? And I know it's become the popular thing to say now is that Calvin Ridley this year is Chris Godwin, but I said it before it was cool, damn it. But yeah, no, so Mohamed Sanu in 2018 saw 94 targets in this offense, and then when he was traded, he was on pace for 96 targets in this offense. Even with him there, Calvin Ridley's been a star in his own right. He's been like a wide receiver too, a guy that's a little bit more touchdown dependent. But last year, even with Sanu there, Ridley was on pace for 1,065 yards and 9 touchdowns prior to being shut down for the final 3 games of the year. Being tied to, you know, having Julio Jones pulling coverage his way, because Julio is still going to get that. But Ridley's now in year 3. Wide receivers often, it used to be known that this was their breakout season in year 3. Though everybody seems to think it happens just like when they walk into the league nowadays. But yeah, Calvin Ridley is a guy that I absolutely love. And they never really replaced Mohamed Sanu. So unless you think that they're going to give Russell Gage 95 targets, I mean, Calvin Ridley's he should be a lock for 110 targets with the chance up to like 125 of them.
Calvin Ridley has 17 touchdowns on 185 targets since joining the league. That's 9.2%. Other elite wideouts: Michael Thomas, 5.4. Julio Jones, 4.3. DeAndre Hopkins, 5.8. I mean, the list goes on and on. He's above them all. And then when you look at yards per target, he's right there as well. 9.12. That's ahead of Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, Devontae Adams. He has been a stud. He just needs the targets, and he's going to get them this season, I think, Andy.
Yeah, I think the other factor here, and like, I like Hayden Hurst a lot, but I don't necessarily think that he's going to fall into 100% of the targets that Austin Hooper saw last year, right? So some of those maybe become available for Ridley as well. Life is obviously really good opposite Julio Jones, because he is going to be, you know, he just has a sort of gravity that very few receivers in the league do. And again, a small uptick in targets for as explosive as Ridley is, I think that's a great call. And like, it's one of those things where like, feel like fantasy analysts are tripping over themselves to be the guy who like really planted the flag on Calvin Ridley. Yep. You know, all he can do is disappoint us at this point. It feels a little bit like Godwin last year.
I planted this flag before he was even drafted. I stuck by Calvin Ridley, even when he had that terrible combine that everybody talked about, that like, oh, he should fall to the sixth round or something like that. I'm like, stop it. Stop it. Like, Calvin Ridley's been my guy.
When Rivals only made him a four-star recruit in high school. Raging.
Tags is like a low-key Falcons fan, the way that I am with the Titans and the Vikings. Like, Tags loves the Falcons, even though they're
not
his team.
They draft good players. What can I say?
Yeah. I think Yates was the first one that was super – Yates was the first one to, like, put him in his top five this year.
I mean, I didn't put him
He's not
five.
On the podcast to defend himself, but he's got him so high. I guess Andy's – it was Chark that Andy was the highest on, but I think Yates is the highest in the entire industry on Ridley.
I was going to say, I have Ridley at 13, and I thought I was, like, one of the highest on Ridley.
Oh, okay, you might be. I'll look that up while Andy's giving us his next player.
Yeah, I'm gonna violate some of the rules that Tags laid out arguing against Chark there, and I'm going to take another guy on a pretty – what I assume is going to be a pretty bad offense, but who is going to fall into a ton of targets. And that's Terry McLaurin. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Who's the number two receiver for Washington? I don't even know. Do they have a number two receiver?
Well, they just lost Kelvin Harmon.
Steven Sims, I guess.
They just have a number one who
could
very well.
And he's a good number one. He's good.
Yeah, yeah. A burner, obviously. Rivera just compared him to DJ Moore, which doesn't seem like a perfect comp to me exactly. And I don't love his quarterback situation. There's a lot here not to like. Still, 900 yards, 7 touchdowns as a rookie, and utterly unchallenged as his team's top target. This guy could get 160 targets this year. Like, at some point, if you're just following targets, you got to consider him a top 20 guy with the potential to be a wide receiver one.
Yeah, you're naming all my favorite guys. I love this show, Andy.
I'm just waiting for Andy to bring up like Keenan Allen next, because he's picking all these players on bad offenses. And I mean, I
have no competition for targets, though.
Hold on. I appreciate the boldness, because I actually have Terry McLaurin as my number 19 receiver. But in terms of like crazy upside, I think he lacks it just because his team doesn't score enough points. And it's almost the same argument I'd use for DJ Chark, because McLaurin and Chark are fantastic wide receivers. I just don't know if I believe in their offense enough to like literally go out on a limb and say, I'm willing to reach to get these guys. If they fall to
That's
me, I'm
fair.
Absolutely willing to take their targets, though.
You know, he also has Dwayne Haskins as his quarterback, who missed him on quite literally 3 wide open touchdowns last year. I remember every single one of them. And I hate remembering it, but man, he was open on all 3 of them. It just kills me. By the way, Calvin Ridley, the highest experts on him. Kyle Yates has him at 11. I've got him at 13. Tags has him at 13. But the CBS Sports guys, Heath Cummings, 12. Dave Richards, 10. And Jamie Eisenberg, 9. Woo!
Wow.
Yeah, there's some people in the industry who are all over Calvin Ridley. We'll see what happens. Tags, it's your turn, buddy.
All right, where do I go from here? All right, well, I mean, obviously, if we're going to talk about wide receivers being drafted outside the top 10 with top 5 upside, I'm going to mention Odell Beckham.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of the most talented wide receivers in the NFL, even though, for whatever reason, fantasy owners have forgotten that. Like, it was funny, Andy, we had a post up on our Instagram on the Fantasy Pros account that it was a Jerry Jeudy post, and it was saying, oh, that a lot of experts have compared him to Odell Beckham Jr., and they're like, well, that sucks, don't draft this guy. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? Like, it blows my mind that people like think that Odell Beckham sucks now. He doesn't suck. It was his first year in the offense, and everybody, to be fair, everybody in that passing attack wasn't great. Even Jarvis Landry, who finished as like he finishes like a top 15 wide receiver. If you look at his games, like if you actually go through them, he was not a great fantasy wide receiver last year. The entire offense just stunk. It was just not very good, and that's why they have a new coaching staff there. It's going to be a lot of 2 tight end sets out there in Cleveland. That's what it seems like under Stefanski. But that's going to allow for Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry to kind of eat up those targets amongst those two and not necessarily have to split it with a third wide receiver. So Odell Beckham, would it shock me if he came out and was the number one fantasy wide receiver this year? Absolutely not.
Exactly. Yeah, I posted this stat a couple months ago, actually. Odell Beckham, 18.9 fantasy points per game so far. That includes last year. The only other guys in NFL history to do that through their 27th birthday, Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, Randy Moss, Jerry Rice. That's it. Nobody else is even above 17.5. Odell Beckham is that good. He was just plain hurt last year.
Yeah, I fully agree with this. I wrote about Beckham probably a month ago as a clear bounce back candidate. Many of the things that you're saying, somebody who could like plausibly bounce back to number one overall, certainly top three, top five overall. And the rage that that came from the fantasy community was really something.
People were like, burned. Yeah. I don't understand that mindset of a guy burned me, so I'm never going to draft him again. Like, what if you did that with Todd Gurley the year that he was the least efficient running back in football? Next year, he broke records. Or if you did it with DeAndre Hopkins when he played all 16 games and was wide receiver 30. Next year, he was the number one wide receiver in football. You can't have that mindset, people.
Yeah, some of it was people who were burned by him in fantasy. Some of it, I think, were just Giants fans who couldn't wait to jump on him.
Sure.
I definitely think he pays a price for having, you know, like we should give him credit for playing through a sports hernia, which is no damn fun to play through. Like he gutted that out all year, played all 16 games, answered some questions in that regard, but obviously was compromised and was compromised for basically the entire season. You know, but the way opinion changed on remember when people were talking about, oh, my God, Cleveland's going to have to pay Baker Mayfield someday. And is he going to make $45 million a year? What the hell?
I'll take him on the Bears. I'll take him the Bears all day.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. He broke the rookie touchdown record. Let's not forget how good this guy is when he has a decent offensive line.
Right. That guy was like a clinic every week in college. Like he can be good again. And Odell Beckham is only 27 and has made most of the great highlight catches of the last 10 years. Right. Like I think this is a great call. And you're right to say that not only can he reclaim wide receiver one status, he can be like overall number one wide receiver.
So a few guys ahead of him in ADP. I'm curious if you would take him over them, Andy. Kenny Galladay, Allen Robinson, Mike Evans, Amari Cooper, Adam Thielen.
All of them.
Me too, Tags.
I don't feel like Cooper should be close to him. I feel like the rest of them should be close. I think I may have Allen Robinson like a tick ahead. But that's it. I think Odell is definitely someone who should be considered right around that like 8 through 11 range. And I've got him solidly ahead of Galladay as well. I like Galladay. I like that whole crew. Probably I like Adam Thielen the least. And honestly, if it came right down to it, I should probably change my ranks because I would probably take Chark over Thielen. I'm looking at my ranks right now and knowing the way I feel about certain players.
Oh, but man, I love Thielen this year. That's interesting.
I mean, I like him, but I like guys who I think can be absolute superstars. And I think Chark is in that club.
All right, Andy. So far, you've named two of my favorite targets, DJ Chark and Terry McLaurin. Can you keep it going with number three, baby?
I bet I can't. This is going to be a flyer that everybody just sort of hates, and everybody's been burned by this guy as well. But I think Will Fuller.
Okay.
Like someday, Will Fuller is going to play 14 healthy games, and it's going to be incredible in terms of like the overall season ending fantasy line. He is literally the one significant offensive weapon on this team that is held over from 2019, like him and Watson. That's it. Everything else is new.
And Kenny Stills just got arrested for a felony.
Right. They've picked a terrible year in which to do this, right? like we're changing out our lead running back. We're changing out like two of our top receivers. Like we're making wholesale changes at a time when we literally can't be physically within 10 feet of any team personnel, right? Like they've picked a horrible year for this. There's no question what the issues are with Will Fuller. It's been his health, largely the health of his hamstrings. He is a clear boom bust player with a long injury history. The thing is, his boom week last year, literally one of the top games in the history of the wide receiver position.
Right.
It was 14 catches, 200 yards, 3 touchdowns.
And besides that, I don't know if he was ever even a wide receiver 3, was he?
He had one game against Indy where he was, yeah.
Yeah, he's either a total dud or he's the number one scoring wide receiver in a given week.
But it's not. That doesn't mean it's going to be like that this year. I mean, every single season is a small sample size. That was 11 games last year.
Right.
11 mm-hmm. samples.
And I just happen to love that he's the one guy that Watson has a pre-existing relationship with that he's going to have rapport with. Obviously, it's is Will Fuller ever going to play 16 healthy games? I would bet against it at this point. If he can give me 12 to 4, I'm talking about him like he's Jordan Reed or something like that. Like maybe this is a doomed pick, but if there's a year out there where he gives us 12 to 14 healthy games, he's going to be an easy 1,100 yards.
I'll probably have some shares of Fuller, especially in best ball, but I'm a Brandon Cooks guy through and through. So I don't know, Tags, what do you think, man? Is Will Fuller going to be the number one in Deshaun Watson's offense? Because if he is, his ADP of wide receiver 35, it's not even close. He's going to be a ton better than that.
Yeah, I've actually been on the clock in drafts before, and I've had a tough time deciding between Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks. I have been starting to trend towards Fuller just because this offseason we have no idea what the chemistry is going to be between someone like Brandon Cooks and Deshaun Watson. But what I can say is that Brandon Cooks has played with this will be his fourth quarterback in 5 years, and he has always seemed to finish as a top 24 wide receiver no matter who his quarterback is, including Jared Goff before all these concussion problems started. But we can't pretend that Brandon Cooks doesn't have injury question marks, too, with those concussions that he's dealt with. So, you know, are they adding up? I don't know. I really just don't want to like this Texans team at all, because like David Johnson doesn't even fit what they do on offense. I don't even understand why they wanted him on the team.
So basically what you're saying is they're both going to get hurt and Randall Cobb's going to be a wide receiver one, right?
Dude, that would be the worst. I mean, Kiki QT is probably the best. Like, he should be playing in the slot. They should have never signed Randall Cobb, but whatever. That's Bill O'Brien for you.
He might get cut, man. I don't know why Bill O'Brien doesn't like him, but he was awesome when he was on the field.
Can I take the all-cut team? I'll take Kiki QT. I will take I'll take Baker Mayfield. What other players are they going to cut so the Bears can sign?
Kind of Baker Mayfield, get out of here, man.
People were talking about them like needing to draft a quarterback. I'm like, stop it.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right, Tex, it's back to you for number three, and then we'll each do two more in a chunk like we did last time.
All right. Yeah, I mean, speaking of people forgetting about talent, I'm gonna go back to AJ Green. You know, people forget
Love
about
it.
How good Beckham was. AJ Green, when he's on the field, he's been a wide receiver one. I mean, it's
every
not really a question
year.
It's more of like, if you don't like AJ Green, it's because you're worried about his health, and I get that, and that's why he's falling, and that's why he's going as like the 28th wide receiver off the board. You're getting a discount on him, and when he's on the field, you're starting him every week. You don't have to worry about it at all. Joe Burrow coming to the team, he has no allegiance to anybody. There's nobody that he's going to favor outside of, well, who's the most talented. AJ Green, is he older? Sure. He's the same age as they came in. Him and Julio Jones came in the league at the same time. For whatever reason, AJ Green is like looked at as a dinosaur and you can't trust him at all. He's going to decline. Whereas Julio Jones still being drafted as a top five receiver and rightfully so. So again, I'm not going to anticipate an injury to AJ Green. I'll take the discount on him. He absolutely has top 15 upside with Joe Burrow as a quarterback.
He was on pace for over 1,300 yards and 12 touchdowns in 2018 before he got hurt. Like, it's not
but
like
Bobby,
he was ever
gets
bad.
Hurt, bro. He's not
sure,
in the lineup,
he gets hurt and it's baked into his price. If he didn't get hurt, I'd be drafting him in the top 12 wide receivers again.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like people just forget how good he is.
Andy, you blew it, man. This was the one I was hoping you would name so we could go 3 for 3, but you didn't go AJ Green, even though you liked him, apparently.
Well, I was going to make the point about 2018. He was almost 80 yards a game. He was fine. There was nothing wrong with AJ Green in 2018 at all. Like, we should worry about injuries to some extent with everyone. And I think at least part of him not coming back last year was the fact that the Bengals were in the situation that they were in, right? Like, it was a good business decision both for the team and for the player. He is clearly the top receiver on that team. It's a really fun offense around Burrow. A lot of people have made the point that you know, Burrow himself has sneaky upside this year. If this had been, not to get off the AJ Green topic, but if this had been a normal offseason with, you know, normal interactions between players and coaching staffs and teams and all that, man, I would have been able to make the case that Joe Burrow could make a run at that Andrew Luck, you know, rookie passing yardage record. I don't think it happens given the weird nature of this offseason, but a lot of talent around him, and AJ Green staying healthy would be the biggest part of it.
And he can throw the ball 640 times, considering how much they're going to be playing from behind with that defense.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Tell us who you think is going to win this bet between Tags and I. Most important question so far on the podcast: Joe Burrow face Ryan Tannehill in fantasy points this year.
Oh man, that's really good.
Make the right decision.
Shoot, I think it's I hate this. I have these guys really
they're
close.
Really close, aren't they? I love them both, but I love my guy so much more. He's going to win the MVP this year.
Yeah, I mean, I have Tannehill ahead.
Yes! I can see the I win, Tags. Eat it, baby.
I mean, you win the Barron's Award. I mean, you guys have agreed on a lot of bad teams in this podcast.
Are you calling the Titans a bad team? Because they're going to win the Super Bowl, dude.
I mean, the Titans could be scary bad if Tannehill doesn't live up to that contract.
Oh, my goodness, Tannehill. Get out of here.
Hold on a second.
We have to move on before I just like lose my mind on this podcast.
I don't even have him close. I have Burrow 7 spots higher than Tannehill.
Ooh, all right. Well, everyone else disagrees
certainly the,
with
certainly
you.
The point in Burrow's favor is Burrow could attempt like 150 more passes.
Yeah, and maybe more than that. Seriously.
That's definitely in play.
And he has the same rushing upside, too, because he runs the ball.
Yeah, Tannehill runs the ball, too. But yeah, you're right. I don't know. Tannehill was unbelievable.
It is an interesting point. Like, we don't associate, like, nobody gives Burrow any credit for running the big.
Yeah, he's good at it.
He saw, like, the college football playoff. Like, he's a pretty good running quarterback. He's not at the level of the elites in the NFL, but he's a pretty good running quarterback.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've got number 4 and number 5 lumped together here, Andy. Who are you going with?
Okay. These guys are going to be relatively deep, deeper, I think, than they should be, given their talent and at least the situation for one. I don't even really particularly like this first guy, but. He is the number one wide receiver on his team. Like, I regret to inform you that DeSean Jackson like is still Philly's number one.
Another Zach one Ertz of my guys. That, yes. Well, for fantasy.
Yeah, Zach Ertz probably leads that team in receptions, obviously. And D-Jax is 33 and he's coming off injury and all that. But we have no timeline on Alshon Jeffrey to return. And the other threat at receiver, Rager, is a rookie. DeSean Jackson, obviously one of the great deep threats of this or any era, somebody who could plausibly finish again around 20 yards per reception. If he just gives us 13 games, he's a wide receiver too, better. I don't like DeSean Jackson still has, win your week upside in any given week. And then my next guy probably needs an injury to really crack the wide receiver 3 ranks, wide receiver 2 ranks, but it, certainly in a season like this in which we have all the normal injury risk, plus we have COVID, all kinds of crazy stuff can happen. And that's going to be Mecole Hardman. Obviously a hugely explosive player, another 20 yard per reception guy, scored 7 touchdowns as a rookie. He's on the right damn team too. Again, the Chiefs are probably going to average 30 to 35 points a game. If he just gets a little bit of run at some point in the season, let's say somebody suffers an injury and all of a sudden Hardman is seeing 7-8 targets a game for like 6 games in a row, he's going to be great.
Do the Chiefs have the best offense in football, or do you think it's the Cowboys?
It's the Chiefs.
You think it's the Chiefs?
Yeah, it's the Chiefs. Yeah.
Cowboys were first in yards per play last year.
One just got $500 million. The other one doesn't have a contract.
That's true. I am not saying Prescott is anywhere near as good as Patrick Mahomes in real life. I'm just saying this offense, man, they've got some killer weapons in Dallas. And that offensive line is substantially better. I don't know about substantially better, but it's decidedly
The Cowboys
better.
Have the best offensive line in football, I think.
I think maybe the Colts or Eagles.
Like,
but
we
yeah,
also
it's,
had
it's
a
all
compromised Patrick Mahomes for several weeks last year, right? So
yeah,
you didn't see, like, the full, awesome, destructive firepower of the Chiefs offense until perhaps the playoffs.
I like both those names, DeSean Jackson and Hardman for fantasy football tags. Who do you have as your final two names?
I'm not going to talk about John Ross because I've already talked about the Bengals enough today. But I'm not saying his name, but I'm not saying his name. I am going to also say Devin Funchess is a deep sleeper.
Oh, yuck. I mean, you're right, but still yuck.
It's a deep. I mean, I think people forget that Devin Funchess was a top 24 fantasy wide receiver with Cam Newton as his quarterback. I mean, if Devontae Adams were to suffer a concussion, that's some, like, he obviously missed some time last year with the concussion. You know, it could be a multi-week scenario. Devin Funchess he's a big body. He's a guy that Aaron Rodgers can trust in the red zone because that guy, for a big guy, he's got strong hands. He's pretty agile in terms of the red zone. He's not a guy that's going to stretch the field or anything like that, but I like him quite a bit as like, you take him in the last round and you see what happens between him and Alan Lazard. And then another player that, again, you're going to find out what you have week one is Jalen Hurd. Jalen Hurd, when you think about Deebo Samuel and what he brings to that 49ers offense and the role that he plays is kind of like a guy that creates after the catch, a guy that they're going to give the ball and they're going to hand the ball off to him. Jalen Hurd used to be a running back. They drafted him in the third round. Like, I like Jalen Hurd as a sleeper going into the last year's draft, and I really thought he was going to be like a fifth, sixth round pick. And then third round, the 49ers grab him. So I'm like, wow, they clearly like him. So if there's someone in that offense that could take over that Deebo Samuel role while Deebo Samuel might start the year on the PUP list, I think it's Jalen Hurd.
Man, Jalen Hurd, week one DFS at home against Arizona with Deebo out. I'm so pumped about it. And also, the next 4 weeks, we've got the Jets, the Giants, the Eagles, the Dolphins. That's five consecutive good matchups for Jalen Hurd. I think that even if Deebo comes back and just takes over, if Jalen Hurd's getting 70% of the snap count in those 5 weeks, he's going to be an absolute steal.
Yeah, I feel like I'm actually in the same place as Tags on Hurd. Like, I was so into him coming into last season, and that was obviously a disappointment. But that's a really good call.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you guys want to add?
Andy, start liking better football teams.
I'll just say that, like, while we're not mentioning Cincinnati receivers, I think T. Higgins can be a star. Not this year, but my God, that guy reminds me of A.J. Green in, you know, not only the good ways, but also in, you know, some of the perceived shortcomings coming into the draft process. I think T. Higgins is going to be really good.
That's exactly. No, I think that he's the replacement for A.J. Green. I think it was a perfect, like,
right.
He's like, he football comes easy to T. Higgins. He may not test off the charts, but when you watch him play football, like, it just comes easy to him. So I definitely like it. And I hope that he learns from A.J. Green and, like, literally studies from that guy, because A.J. Green really took that next step when he spent the offseason with Calvin Johnson. And then A.J. Green became such a dominant force in the NFL.
All right, guys, that's all for today's show. Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, it was our pleasure, especially when you agree with me about the bet over Tannehill and Burrow. I loved that. Guys, give Andy a follow on Twitter if you don't already. He's at his name, Andy Behrens. And don't forget to check out our cheat sheet creator. It is going to make your life super easy, and it's going to help you win your fantasy leagues. It's at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. And don't forget to give us a follow on Instagram at fantasypros, at Mike Tagliere, at Bobby Fantasy Pro, and at Kyle Y NFL. And thanks to the sponsor of today's show, Pristine Auction. You're going to love their website. There's great values to be found. Use that registration code FANTASYPROS when you sign up. It's going to give you $5 off, and that's Fantasy Pros, all one word. PristineAuction.com is PRISTINE auction.com. For Andy Behrens and Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network,
available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carol Jean.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.